What do you think people should know about Jeff Adachi?
Well, he was a fierce fighter. He was unrelenting in his pursuit of justice and protecting the underdog, the downtrodden, people that others had kind of given up on in many cases. And he really brought all of it to the fights. He was there 100%, and he expected a lot from his lawyers, and he wasn't shy to let them know that.
What about him do you know that other people don't know? Because that was kind of the public image he put forth, and I've heard people talk about that, which is really inspiring, and he led such a large, dedicated office. But what about the man, Jeff Adachi?
Well, I think actually he did a really good job of personifying both of those things during his life. If you were a little bit in his orbit, you would see that he had a great sense of humor and he loved to have a good time. In a real just fun way. If you were out drinking with him, he wanted to have a little bit more of that. If he went dancing, he wanted, he wanted to keep going. He also collected a wide group of friends from really just disparate backgrounds, because he engaged with people at kind of like this really honest place. It wasn't like what your job was and how much money you had. So the span, the spectrum of who he engaged with was rich and poor. It really was everybody. And I was saying to somebody, walk down any street in the Bayview or the Tenderloin or the Fillmore or even the Haight in places. He was the most popular guy walking down the street. He was like a celebrity, basically. And even in my old supervisorial district, more people know Jeff Adachi than they do me, which always made me laugh,
I'm not sure that's actually true.
It is true. This happened a few times, so, yeah.
Oh, is it true that he didn't really sleep very much?
He got up early, I think would be more accurate, so he tended to work out pretty early in the morning. And, sometimes in the middle of a meeting, midday, you might see him kind of dozing off just a tiny bit. By and large, he was early riser, and he had a lot of energy, and he just wanted more. That was his thing.
You came to this office in 1991, is that right?
That's right. I came here in 91. I think Jeff had been here about 4 years. So we weren't actually contemporaries, but we were. Now it seems like we were contemporaries, but back then, he was probably in felonies. He was handling felony trials when I was doing misdemeanor trials.
And how have you seen the office change during that time? That's almost 30 years.
Well, people talk about the work ethic here, and we fight cases. We really take care of our clients. We have investigators, social workers, paralegals. And the attorneys, likewise, have a commitment to this work. That wasn't always the case, I'm sorry to say. And I think attorneys like Jeff Adachi, I count myself in that group, we changed the culture of the office because we wanted more for our clients. And slowly, it started to move in this direction from just this basic idea that you get a lawyer who might help you work out a plea, to you're getting a lawyer who's like down for the fight, and no matter how big the obstacle is thinking about what's the right outcome for you. And Jeff built this great law office. He built the ethics and the culture here, and I'm not worried about the future of the office, because I think it's so ingrained now, that culture, that whoever becomes the public defender, they're gonna be leading a really great group of lawyers who already know what kind of office they want it to be. It's impossible, I think, to dismantle this office. Not that anybody would want to.
One of the aspects of the public defender's office here that seems to have been a passion of his and certainly for others is the immigrant defense unit. We reported on that pretty recently on KALW. What were some of the other focal points for Jeff and the office overall here in the public defender's?
Well, I think it's been this continued effort over some of these units like social work, where you've got social workers really working to put together family histories, where you can really utilize that to try to get better outcomes and or program commitments for them, to just really understand clients and families and connect with them. I think, like, just the fundamental thing of paralegals, the idea that attorneys need support for some of the more mundane is maybe disparaging word, but, you know, the attorney shouldn't be filling out subpoenas for witnesses when they should be writing that legal brief. And our paralegals, I think most of them are lawyers and do writing of motion work, and they do a lot of technical IT trial work, legal research. I mean, they're really on top of it. He was certainly proud of our juvenile unit. We've got a mental health unit, and we've got all kinds of programs that we call specialty courts, whether it's community justice court or youth court or, you know, whatever it might be, behavioral health court. These were all constructed to try to find ways to take a problem that was being treated in the criminal justice system and in effect bring it out of that system into programs that try to affect underlying problems. And of course, it, you know, it makes perfect sense. If you really work on the real issues at hand, you've got long-term gains. And he was very committed to that.
Is that something that a public defender's office has jurisdiction over or budget for? Or is that something that developed here or is that was actually kind of lacking?
Well, you know, typically either an idea like that would originate here, sometimes the district attorney's office, sometimes it would come out of the mayor's office. And, of course, the mayor has the challenge of trying to make sure all the criminal justice partners can get resources to do that work. But, you know, that's how it would be put together. There are a couple programs known as the MAGIC programs, which are super important, which, interestingly enough, you know, there was always that question mark of why are they based out of our office. But it made sense when you really understood what they did. You know, these services are trying to provide services for our clients and their families in many respects, underserved communities. And so our programs were about trying to coordinate programs that already existed. So there wasn't so much about direct services, a little bit of that, but mostly about making sure service providers that were being funded out of the mayor's budget were talking to one another and not overlapping services. You know, I didn't mention the Clean Slate program. I mean, that's another program.
That's where people who have felonies on their record can have them cleared so they can get employment.
Exactly. So, you know, that was a program. I don't think Jeff started the first one of its kind in the country, but we were certainly very, very early in that effort in getting others to buy into it.
Actually, I think that I read that Jeff was at a dedication of a building for a magic program in Bayview, I think, the day he died, actually.
You know, I didn't attend the luncheon. I knew Jeff was going to it. He and I actually had to cancel a lunch with one another because it was my 8th anniversary as a chief attorney, and we meant to celebrate that. And unfortunately, we rescheduled it, and it's not going to happen, of course. But yeah, I mean, he loved being in the community, and it was just authentic presence. It wasn't just a guy that rolled into the community and wanted the mic for a couple of minutes. It was really a guy that walked into that room. He knew people, he knew family members, he may have represented some of them. He certainly fielded questions from community members and treated people with a lot of dignity. And, you know, there's nobody really liked this guy. I mean, he was really special and, you know, total respect for him.
Well, one thing that I found really interesting was when he ran for mayor against Ed Lee back, I guess, in 2011, he ran on a platform of trying to refill the pension funds, which was about the unsexiest topic and yet one of the most important topics possible.
You know, I advised him not to get into that race, and I told Jeff that, you know, if it were an open race, I thought that he would be able to get in there and really articulate his message. in a crowded field, you know, where there were already other candidates, and Ed Lee was obviously an incumbent running.
And that was a race with a lot of well-known candidates, a lot of real heavy political players in San Francisco. Yeah.
And so I think for Jeff, the pension work that he had done, particularly in previous years, had alienated some of the progressives. And I think the way it got teed up wasn't really fair, and maybe people didn't understand what Jeff was trying to do, because I totally get it. If you think Jeff Adachi's trying to raid public pensions money, or he's lining up with the big banks or something who don't want to pay their taxes, and he'd rather go after pensions, I get that you would be upset with that. But what Jeff saw was, wait a second, he would be supportive of any progressive taxation or mechanisms to try to get more money into the city coffers. But in the absence of that, and sometimes the absence of that because of the very people that were criticizing him for pension reform wouldn't support those other measures, he says, look, if this is the universe of resources, yes, I wish public pensions and private pensions were even better than what we have. But if this is the universe, we have to scale back and deal with the social programs that can help my clients, is the way he was thinking. I know people may disagree with it, but it was not coming from a position of, you know, anti-labor. It was coming from a position of really trying to desperately find resources to help the poor. I think it was Mayor Newsom at the time, who himself was struggling with a difficult economy, and, you know, how do you get resources to do all the things you want to do? And so, you know, these things are complicated, and he should not be criticized as severely as he has been for that.
So you were talking about the relationship between the Public Defender's Office and the DA and these different city agencies. I'm wondering, how does that relationship play out? You were critical of some of the ways in which police have handled the investigation or the release of information about Jeff's death. How is that relationship between the public defenders and, say, other law enforcement?
Well, there has to be space for us to criticize one another and to dialogue about these things, but we also have to come at it from a point of view that is respectful, that these are other important elected, in some cases, but, you know, appointed public officials who also have a duty to protect the public in some cases and to do their jobs well. You know, Vicki Hennessy, for instance, is an elected official, the sheriff, and, you know, Jeff has been critical of some of the things happening in her jail. Look, I can tell you for certain she does not like the allegations being true. I mean, she's not interested in tolerating wrongdoing. On the other hand, sometimes when it gets to that point where even your criminal justice partners are trying to alert you to the fact that it may be more widespread than you've accepted, you know, there has to be some space to be able to do that. And, you know, to her credit, she sent very genuine and sincere condolences, even now when, you know, Jeff has been involved making suggestions about reform in her department. I mean, she's a stand-up person and, you know, respected Jeff. Bill Scott, the chief of police, I saw Bill Scott in this office many times to sit down, to check in with Jeff, to talk about issues. You know, there's somebody who inherited a department that needed reform. He's been working on it. Sure, some will criticize it's not happening fast enough or this or that, but they're always critics. You know, then there are people that are trying to do it, and I think he has really tried to do it. Now, same story. You know, Jeff has been critical of the police and certainly let them know that there are things about that department that we would like to see different. So again, these criminal justice partners understand. I think they understand it. You know, sometimes the rhetoric might get a bit inflamed, you know, and so that can hurt anybody's feelings, but these are important matters also. And I should add, George Gascon has been very, very generous to us.
The DA.
Yeah, the district attorney. you know, we have a lot of respect for him. He has also extended very genuine, you know, feelings, condolences over what happened. And, you know, gone so far as to also criticize some of the leaks that have been out there. Again, you don't do that if you don't respect your adversaries. So, you know.
Yeah, it's obviously an interesting situation where you have people who are on opposite sides of legal cases, but then, you know, I guess it's the proverbial go and maybe have a drink or talk afterwards.
Yeah, and in this case, it's almost, there's a bit of that idea that you can have friendships and still maintain professional disagreements, but there is something very deep-seated about this criminal justice system, that although the public defenders feel like we're fighters and we're outside of the system or we're not part of it, we are part of it. And it helps our clients when we have relationships where we can sit down and ask for special consideration for individual clients who maybe had challenges that, you know, just put them in a very vulnerable place. And sometimes you have to go hat in hand to have these conversations. And Jeff was willing to do that also. I mean, you know, we call him a fighter and all that, but he could also go in and respectfully ask for special consideration, you know.
So final question. Do you have any little story that can shed some insight into who he was as a person, something that, you know, comes to mind when you think of Jeff Adachi?
That comes to mind when I think about him, that I'm allowed to speak publicly about.
Yeah, let's keep it for radio.
Yeah. I just have so many memories of him. You know, when we were young lawyers, I mean, it's really less about, well, I'll tell you the story and maybe another will pop in my head. But I remember when I was a young lawyer, I was doing misdemeanor trials and they were on the second floor. And felony trials were done on the third floor. And this is about 1992. And I finished giving a closing argument, a particularly difficult case. And I was sitting there waiting on a verdict, talking to an old-time bailiff, you know, sheriff deputy. And I remember he said, I got to tell you, Matt, you are really the best lawyer. And he said, on the second floor, he said, Jeff Adachi's the best lawyer on the third floor. And I remember thinking, like, who's this Jeff Adachi guy, you know? Because, you know, you're young and arrogant and you think, you know, you're the best around. But I think that's probably about the time I started paying attention to who Jeff Adachi was. And, you know, young lawyers want to emulate, you know, other lawyers. And I remember working with him on a trial. It was a burglary case. And I was in court taking notes and helping him, and a judge actually kicked me out of the courtroom because he thought I was sleeping. He literally interrupted, I think it was Judge Cantelli, he interrupted the proceedings and said, hey, you, and I looked up from my note-taking, he says, get out of the courtroom, you're not allowed to sleep here. And, you know, so all these just like little memories pop back in my head. You know, I remember being in court, you know, when a judge, you know, Jeff was handling a murder case, and the judge disparagingly said to him, because he didn't like, he wasn't going to rule in Jeff's favor and was being irritated, and he basically said to him, you know, do you have any other case to cite from the Tokyo Reporter, you know? I mean, these are, that really happened, you know? That was like the early 90s. And the culture across the street changed because of guys like Jeff, you know?